Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hope Mindful Compassion Show. My name is Paul Garrigan and I look after the mindfulness program here at Hope.
Hello, I'm Andrea and I'm the website and social media manager at Hope.
What I would like to talk about today is dealing with the addiction of a loved one. So we've done a lot of podcasts on dealing with it as an individual. But also, it's not just the individual that's affected. It can be their family. Well, it's usually their family and friends as well. So basically, I'm looking for a different perspective. So you've had experience of being on the other side of addiction, haven't you?
Yes, I have. My uncle and my dad are both alcoholics, or my uncle was. He died last year. I grew up surrounded by addicts. That sounds harsh, but yeah, I had addiction in my family and it had quite the impact on me.
And what age would you say when you first started noticing that there was a problem?
It's a tricky question, right? That there was a problem. I was probably 12 when an incident with my uncle happened. And way before that, I was just very uncomfortable with my dad's drinking, but I didn't know any difference, so I didn't know that's a problem. Like, I was just watching him drink a lot of beer and other alcoholics like rum and whatever there was around, and I never liked the smell of beer. I was disgusted by the smell of it and wine and everything, and then how aggressive he became after drinking a certain amount of alcohol.
And so would you say even before you realized what the problem was, that you were kind of dealing with the problem?
Oh yeah, of course.
So I remember my father was an alcoholic, and he would sort of say as a kid, about bringing people home, he didn't like bringing people home because he'd never know what he'd find, what mood he'd be in.
Me neither, yeah.
And so even though you sort of, it may have seemed kind of normal because it's what you're used to, but you're probably having to strongly adapt, were you, to the drinking?
Well, of course you have to adapt. It was a lot walking on eggshells around my dad when he was intoxicated. You just never knew in what mood he would be in, just as you said now. And most of the time he was very, very short-tempered, and anything could just, set him off.
So what happened when you were 12? You mentioned being 12 and finding out more about addiction. What happened then?
Yeah, so that was my uncle, my dad's brother, and he was my childhood hero. He was I looked up to him. He never accepted any alcohol from my dad, my impression was he just doesn't drink any alcohol. I was so proud of that, and he would just be the one reading every single wish from my eyes and being really playful, really having his inner child come out and play with us kids. I have a brother and do fun stuff together, and he never really punished us for anything. He'd say, well, that's not okay, please don't do that again, and it was fine. I really preferred that over being punished.
He's your dad's brother?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, my dad's brother. My dad's brother. And then when I was 12 years old, it was just a normal Saturday afternoon, so I thought, but my mom was doing the dishes, and I was standing there in the kitchen, and she said, well, your dad's just gone out to get your uncle, and he's been drinking for a week. I was like, what, drinking? And she's like, yeah, well, he's a binge-drinking alcoholic. He usually does that every 3 months. And then she described very in detail how that, what that would look like. And I just never found out about it because in my family, getting things under the rug instead of talking about them is a big issue. So my grandma used to deal with that, and recovering him after such an episode. And my grandma had died, so then my dad took it on, and he brought him to the house to have him detox for a week. And so I was standing there still shell-shook from the news itself, and he came in his one-week-old jammies. It was an ugly, really ugly picture. He was stinking. He was completely pissed. He could barely walk. He could barely speak, actually. And he came over to me and just hugged me really tight, and I was standing there frozen, absolutely frozen. Didn't know what to do. I just wanted it to end. And then eventually he let go, and someone put him into the living room, And my mom said, well, your dad and I, we have to set up the basement now for him to be there and live there. Could you please go over there? Here you have some tissues, and tell him he's all right and you're all right and that you still love him. And I did. I was just used to obeying, but I was not centered at all. Like, I was completely out there. I was like, what's happening? And I sat down with him and I told him everything's all right and I still love you, but that was not what I felt. I just wanted to run, basically.
It's very, because I mean, especially if you knew nothing about this kind of, you know, about withdrawals and how. Because the way you're describing it, it almost sounds like something like from an old movie, like, you know, the drunk uncle sort of down in the basement, you know. It was
pretty crazy. And then I didn't know back then, that's something I learned at home, that you might feel like you're dying when you're detoxing from other drugs, but the one you can actually die from is an alcohol detox. My parents probably didn't know either. So they had him down there and he was detoxing, and at night he'd scream, I'm gonna kill myself if you don't give me alcohol right now. And that's bizarre. Like, in the evenings when we would have supper, and my mom would send me down to the basement with a key and say, please get your dad some bottles of beer. So I had to walk through the room where my uncle was detoxing in and get some bottles of beer. And I was scared shitless, because I didn't know how I'd react, right? He never did anything to me physically, but I just didn't know that person anymore.
It's kind of like being asked to walk through a lion's cage with some raw meat.
yeah, basically. They didn't know better, right? But, like, looking back, I'm like, how could they? Like, yeah.
And how did that end? I mean, did he stop drinking then?
Well, he tried to, and he promised to, and no, he did not really. I kept away from him, right? I stopped.
It sounds like he was almost like, you know, a substitute dad to you.
Yeah, well, back before that he was, and then I just broke every contact. I didn't answer the phone, I just didn't talk to him, and I refused to go to any family meetings where he was present. I did that for a whole year. And after that year, even then, I would maybe talk to him on the phone, but I refused to be alone in a room with him and everything. And the relationship was just broken, as close as we were before that, as far apart we were afterwards. And that was due to me. Like, I cut the contact. He would have loved to reconcile and everything, but I just couldn't. I couldn't. And
do you think if you had known then more about addiction, would it have been different, or was it just too much of a betrayal?
If
your parents had explained to you how addiction works, how he's not, you know, himself, that kind of thing.
Maybe it would have helped if I had been, you know, if it wasn't that big family secret. If I had grown up with it and with the explanations. Maybe when the child is 4 years old, you explain things differently than when it gets older. But just that this is an issue and it is a disease. And, you know, if that was explained and if it had been with me all the time, then it might have been. But at 12 years old, when you think that person doesn't drink alcohol at all, and then you find out, then you see that person in the worst possible state. And because you asked if he kept drinking. So once everything got a little better, like 2 years later or something, I invited him for my birthday, said, well, it would be kind of nice if you came over for dinner and stuff. And he promised me he'd be there. And then on that day he called me and I could hear that he was drunk again. And I was like, how could you promise me on that day and be drunk again? And yeah. And after that, I didn't care to know. I didn't want to know. So I was just, yeah, I didn't want to know. So I assume he kept drinking, and because of that, he had a lot of physical problems. Eventually, way too late, he went to the hospital. He got, I don't know how many stents into his heart, and he lived about another year, and then he died.
Sounds horrendous. And how did it affect you? How has it affected your life, though? So with your dad and your uncle. Your uncle seems to have been almost more significant for you, but how did those experiences seem to have affected you?
Well, there was a time when I just stayed away from drunk people as far as possible. So I didn't go out and party when I was younger. I would change the side of the road if I saw a drunk person coming down the road. I once saw a person being so drunk they stumbled on railroads.
Do you have drunk people in Munich? You're from Munich, isn't it?
I'm from Munich. We have the Oktoberfest. So, Bavaria itself has a huge drinking and beer tradition, right? Everyone knows that. And then the Oktoberfest, so once a year, all the world comes to celebrate beer festival and gets drunk
there. So it must be quite hard to avoid.
It is hard to avoid. It is hard to avoid. That's at least I try to stay clear of it, right? It's not always possible. I would not get close to even my friends when they were drinking. Like, once I refused to hug a friend goodbye because she was drunk. And that had quite the impact on our friendship because she couldn't understand. And I just couldn't do it.
Did you tell people when you were younger about what was going on, or did you tend to keep it to yourself?
So the first, So I had my best friend then knew. I tend to talk about stuff. I tend to be very
What's the sense of shame around it?
For me, the sense of shame was around my dad and how he treated me sometimes. And that's why I wouldn't bring people home, because I never knew if he would just be very dismissive and put me down in front of my friends or say something to my mother that was not appropriate, or not very nice at least. And then I would talk about my uncle, because that was just like a bomb falling down on me. Yeah, so I talked to my best friend back then. Took very long for me to, I opened up to the neighbor kids one day, and it was I must have been 14 or something. No, it can't be, sorry. I must have been 10. And we were talking, and I don't know how we got there, but I said, I do get beaten by my dad, or at least slapped into the face, or once in a while over the knee. And they were like, what? That's illegal. And I was like, seriously?
Not my
house. I didn't know that, right? I didn't know.
Did you get any support? Did you reach out for some of the sort of bit more official support, or the addiction helplines, or the recovery groups, that kind of thing?
I didn't know. And back then, internet was not that big of a deal back then. It was just growing to something, and I didn't understand the resources that were available. I just didn't. But then later on, I talked. When I was 16, I opened up to more relatives, and I got support from them. They were giving me hugs, and they were just listening. They were just being there for me. And then way later, when I was already in my 20s, another friend of mine, she told me about self-help groups, AA subdivision groups, for people who grew up.
Alateen and...
Alateen, but I wasn't a teenager anymore, so...
So adults...
Adults,
children of alcoholics.
Grown-up children of alcoholics or something like that. Yeah, I only know the German word. Sorry. I went to a few meetings. I actually went to one convention and, 10 meetings. It really helped me. It was such an eye-opener. In theory, I knew there must be more people out there like me
Would that have made a difference if you hadn't been doing that during, when you were 12?
Yes, because it's a massive support network. Mm. And I would have just understood better. I wouldn't have felt so alone. I was really ashamed because the families of my friends seemed normal, right? When I grew older, my teens, I understood more, this is not normal. This is not healthy. And I question it, and I was very hard on my mom, always questioning it, because I could have these arguments with her. I didn't dare to have them with my dad.
Mm. And if there was somebody right now in the position that you were in back then, what would you suggest they do?
Just talk about it. Open up to someone whom you trust. Your best friend's parents, if you trust them, your teacher, look, like today, internet is like so natural for the kids. So just Google the next L-teen meeting and yeah, go there. Like, it's really helpful. It's really good. It took me a year to go to my first meeting. Most very helpful.
And what should they do? I mean, if, you know, if the parent is being violent or otherwise abusive?
They call for help. Really call for help. Like, yeah, if it's really, really violent, then you just have to get out of there. There will be support.
Just kind of changing the subject just slightly. We left you, you're in sort of, you know, back in Munich, and you have friends that are sort of going away, and you unhook them because they've been drinking.
Mm.
And yet here you are working in a rehab in Thailand. And, you know, what happened there? Did you get over your...
It's still sometimes when the clients come and they're like highly intoxicated, it's hard for me. It's tough for me. It's something... Yeah, it's really tough for me. But I am here because I want to understand addiction better. And it's so inspiring to see people who want to work on themselves, who want to slay that beast of addiction, and to get to know the people behind the addiction, because they're like really good and decent human beings, the most interesting characters sometimes. And just to see like the human behind the addiction and not just the label, and a lot of things just like keep touching me very deeply.
An important part of the sort of say a program like this is this idea of making amends. I mean, for even before we go to that though, would you say that people who have been addicted and maybe did bad stuff around their families, do they have a right to expect to be forgiven?
A right to expect to be forgiven.
A right to be forgiven. Sorry.
I think everyone deserves, not everyone, but most of the times you deserve to be forgiven, but only if you truly regret what you were doing. Like, it has to be sincere, and you can't expect it, right? You can be sincere and you can apologize from deep in your heart and you can make promises, but you can't expect it, right? It's like up to the other person if they're in the mind space to forgive. Like,
some people won't be in a position to forgive.
Right. Like, I'm still at the moment, like, I'm still not talking to my parents. Like, I cut the contact because of many reasons that came together. And when I cut the contact the first, like, in the very beginning, I was like, no, I'm not ever going to talk to them ever again. And there was no sincere apology from their side either. But now I'm like, yeah, maybe. Like, after working on myself and after growing and getting more compassionate and more understanding around the subject of addiction and dysfunctional family dynamics and stuff like that, I'm like, yeah, maybe one day I will be ready to talk to them again. But I do have forgiven them, and that didn't even need them asking for, or didn't even need them apologizing. Like, I if they do, my mother has. I appreciate it highly. It's a really important part. But for me, myself, I was clinging to resentments.
Yeah,
for
we suffer when we do that, don't we?
And it's just hurting, like, it was hurting myself. That's why I started therapy, and I was like, I do want to learn how to forgive my parents, because, like, I'm just limiting myself if I cling to that. And there's always reasons why you cling to resentment. You get something out of it. But it took me months, it took me over a year to get to that point where I was like, yeah, I think I can let go. And for some people, it might take 10 years, and for some people, it might be impossible to forgive.
And you just brought up a kind of an interesting point there as well, when you mentioned that you needed therapy for all of this. Because, I mean, when somebody, say, goes to rehab, I mean, all the attention is going to be on them, isn't it?
Yes.
But yet you have this whole family that's been affected.
Yes.
And is there anything you can say around that issue? Like, should, like, I mean...
Yeah, it's it's funny and weird and bizarre that all the treatment focuses on the addict, only on the addict, because addiction has a huge impact on the whole family. Everyone gets their role in this dysfunctional network, right? And so one person goes away, stays for 4 to 12 weeks or maybe longer, maybe not. And then they come back and they worked on themselves and they are like a slightly different person or maybe a completely changed person.
And then you should be behaving.
Then they expect that everything has changed with them, but the others didn't get support or help. And like, they don't know how to deal with that new person or how to treat that new person, how to behave around that new person.
Or even if they can trust them.
Yeah, or if they can trust them, maybe it's just a facade, right?
So what you know, so if somebody is going, going back to their family after, say, being somewhere like Hope, I mean, what would you suggest they do to sort of, to at least begin earning the trust back of the family?
So the person going back?
This is the person going back, yeah.
Wow, just extremely open communication. Like,
is action more important than words?
Like, well, of course, actions are always more important than words. Yeah. Actions are more important than words. Like, just stick to whatever you say. If you say, and even if it's just small stuff, if you say, I'm taking care of the grocery shopping from now on, and that's my responsibility that I'm taking on, then just do it. And
is it likely to take time to win that trust back, would you say?
Of course, yeah. It's going to take a lot of time. Trust is lost in a second, but it takes, like, sometimes ages to earn back.
Well, maybe, I mean, you said lost in a second, but I mean, it sounds like you years and years of,
yeah,
you know,
like,
dysfunction, and like maybe a week of function isn't gonna make up for that.
No, it will take a very long time. So my advice would be to just be patient and understanding towards the family members who have not got that intensive treatment. Like, they might still go to 1 or 2, even 3 meetings a week, but that's not the same as if you go to rehab and like intensively focus on yourself and like work on all the different aspects of yourself.
I mean, that sort of fits in with this, and I've just thought about it now. One of the most inspiring things that happened to me was actually before my own addiction started. I was about 14, and I was in rural Ireland, this village, and I remember meeting this man with his family. And this man, he was just oozing peace. And, you know, his family were around him, and it was so obvious they all adored him. And, you know, people, like neighbours and stuff, were coming in. It was just something about this guy that I found absolutely, it really affected me deeply. I found out later he used to be the village drunk. And that somehow he'd become this inspiration. I mean, you know, one of these people you just meet and they just blow you away with how, and it wasn't necessarily because he was saying much, it was just this lovingness about him, that, you know, and his family and his friends, it was so, his openness was obviously affecting them. So, you know, because it could sound very pessimistic, well, I've ruined my family now, there's nothing I can do, but it's not true, is it?
No, it's like, it's a living, breathing thing. It can grow back together. Like, you can mend stuff again. It just might take time, right? When you break your arm, it doesn't heal overnight. Like, you break it in an instant, and then it just takes, sometimes it takes very long to heal. Then even if the bone has healed, it might take longer for like pain to go away. Or if you break your hand, to have a full functioning hand again, it just takes time. And the same with families.
Just to finish up, is there any resources that you'd recommend for anyone, you know, that was, say, in your position? I know we mentioned Alateen and Adult 12
yes.
Step 1.
Yes.
Is there any other resources you've come across?
Well, for me personally, I really liked one book that I got as a gift from another woman who also grew up with an alcoholic dad, and it's called Daddy, Where Were You?
Do you remember who wrote it?
No, I don't remember.
I'll check it out.
But we can put the link with the podcast.
You can put the link on the podcast. That's really fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Paul.